Now on alternate Fridays at 12:10 with yours truly, Chris Bricker, and co-host Siobhan Canty, President and CEO of Jefferson County Foundation, to talk about new developments, new paradigms, and the new normal facing Jefferson County as we roll through the last half of 2020 and into 2021. Siobhan, welcome once again this week.
Hi, Chris. Great to be with you again. And I don't think I'm alone in saying the sooner 2020 can be over, the better.
Well, we're all working on that, aren't we?
Indeed.
Yeah. So you've been busy this week. You've had a project you've been working on, haven't you?
We have. Actually, our offices have moved. We're in Glen Cove now. Jefferson Community Foundation is in a new space provided for free by Edensaw Woods. So we just want to send a huge thank you to Kiwi Ferris and all of the folks at Edensaw for hosting us going forward. And as soon as we've cleaned up these boxes, we'll invite everyone to come for a socially distanced visit.
Are you sitting on a box right now?
Indeed, I am.
How did I know? Well, gee. Well, you'll get all unpacked and straightened out, and big thanks to Kiwi. He's always coming through just at the right time sometimes.
Chris, on that note, that's a perfect opportunity to give them a shout out. As everyone knows, the United Good Neighbors campaign is going to be launching in November, and supporting frontline organizations and local workplaces play such a huge part in that campaign. And Kiwi and the team at Edensaw, they have over 80% of their employees participate in workplace giving, just an extraordinary number. So this is not by far a singular act of community-mindedness on their part. It's a company that's truly cherished and committed to the well-being of our community. So great, great organization.
All right. Thanks, all you folks out there at Edensaw. Well, it's I'm delighted to hear that you are ensconced in new digs, and that's a wonderful thing. But in the middle of that, you're working on a project for the board, and you're doing all kinds of things.
It's funny because some of that connects to why we're in this new space. Some of our listeners might remember that Jefferson Community Foundation was asked to leave its space for having a Black Lives Matter sign up in our old space, and we're pleased to let folks know that we have just decided on making a donation to Black Lives Matter. We'll be giving them $5,000 for Black Lives Matter East Jefferson County, so that the people that are there trying to get that organization started for our community have some resources and some leadership training as they get started. And then we're also in a partnership with Jefferson Land Trust, where the two organizations are going to sponsor an anti-racist training for local executive directors and put together a learning cohort to be led also by Black Lives Matter, so that we can learn about not only how to be personal allies, but how our organizations can be committed to equal and human rights for all and to fighting systemic racism where we have the opportunity to do that. So there's really some growing momentum around the anti-racist movement in Jefferson County, and we're really proud to be part of that.
Well, that's good news. And there's, you know, I'm looking around and I'm seeing some of the articles that our wonderful reporters at The Leader have been covering. The word resiliency comes to mind, and I know that that's on the top of your list of things to do and things to advocate for. What's happening with what's happening there?
Oh, we have a lot of good news, actually. So we want to just send out a real note of gratitude to Jefferson County, who worked with the city on the interlocal collaborative group and got another round of CARES Act funding out to local resiliency projects. And so some of the projects that they funded this last week include a family resources navigator through the YMCA We had mentioned that on an earlier show, but, you know, families kind of had to find their own way through the wilds of services so that they could have their children move to digital learning and have their mental health supported and so many other resources that they need. And so now going forward, they're going to be able to go to one spot, one website, and to have the support of a family resource navigator to help them figure out where the resources are they need. The additional funding was given to the Jefferson Farmers Markets Association for their SNAP benefits for folks who need food assistance. And then utility assistance will be available for households and for businesses who might be behind on their utility bills because of the economic impacts of COVID. And then finally, some child care support, again, to the YMCA to make sure that that folks who need extra child care, especially for their younger children as they go back to work, is available. So those grants represent a lot of work, not only by the government, but by our local community, who they have six teams coming together to look at issues like human services, like food systems, economic recovery, and just a really outstanding piece of work by the government in hosting those groups and in listening and putting some resources where they're desperately needed. So that's a great advancement for our community this week.
Yeah, Siobhan, I was just thinking it's so important to have a mechanism like that, a pilot for the boat, so that the boat can sort of go where it needs to go. There's so many single parents and so many families out there that know that there's assistance out there, maybe, but they don't necessarily know how to go about, square one. And I think this is just really important.
And it's especially important, Chris, as we see the mental health needs of our community just continue to grow. We're just getting more and more indicators that this pandemic is getting tougher and tougher, especially on families. We were all just devastated to hear of another youth suicide that happened in our community about 10 days ago. And I don't know if folks read the Leader article on domestic violence, but that the police are seeing an increase in domestic violence this year. And so it just indicates to us, and data nationally is showing that the pressure is growing. And so it's a great time to remind people, please reach out. If you're feeling like you need support, there are places to go. The Suicide Prevention Hotline is 800-273-8255. There are many other suicide hotlines available as well. You can talk to your friends. There are projects that you can reach out to, the Benji Project locally. There's one in Seattle called the It Gets Better Project. There's one called To Write Love on Her Arms, or Toloha. And there are just plenty of places where people can reach out to. And all of us, for those of us who are feeling like we're navigating this well, remember to reach out to your neighbors, to your children, and just invite them to talk. Because without those outlets, it really does get grim. And there's no time, I think, in our lifetimes where it's more important than we undertake the acts of community and deeply connect with each other and support each other.
The isolation and sometimes the depression that results from that can be overwhelming to all of us at some point or another. You know, we all have our times, especially in the COVID era and the political era. And so it's comforting to know that there are people out there, and it's also comforting to know that neighbors know that their neighbors are
interested. And that's something that we've done so well, I think, here around emergency preparedness. We've made those connections, be ready for an earthquake. Well, this is really an emotional earthquake for a lot of people. So to think about those connections that you have through work or through your neighborhood that you might not have a personal conversation with those folks, now's the time to make it personal. With a light touch, just reaching out, and even just handing over maybe a website or a phone number in case if you think someone might be uncomfortable talking about it, but they might need help. They're very gentle ways to offer support.
There are. And, you know, we have to remember that. I had a matter of fact, I had a gentle conversation this morning with someone very dear to me. And, you know, it's important.
Mm-hmm.
It's important.
It's what will get us through for sure.
Yeah. Well, speaking of isolation, you know, there have been some articles that have come out, not only about the homeless shelter predicament at the fairgrounds and some of the problems there, but also domestic violence. You know, the statistics are complicated and they reveal only part of the large part of the problem, and because they're not necessarily accurate. They're not accurate in the COVID era for a number of reasons. And I know Dove House, for example, has got their hands full, even though some statistics are down for them, but the statistics can be skewed just by the situation that we're living in.
That's right. In fact, they are reporting that numbers are down. That doesn't surprise me, though, because, you know, as we have mentioned on this show before, the local mental health hotlines and programs are also seeing the same numbers as last year. And we know that these issues are growing. And what it says to us is that people are remaining isolated. They're not reaching out at levels that they need to. And that they're waiting until it really gets to be a serious situation where perhaps leaving a home and going to Dove House would have been comfortable before. They're foregoing that and waiting till it gets to really crisis situation and then calling the police. So that would explain the lower numbers at Dove House and the higher numbers at the police station. And really, again, that speaks to the isolation that folks are feeling. I think that too is a probably best addressed by a neighborly ear. And if you hear of anything that you are concerned about, calling in some assistance, you know, not intervening yourself, but calling in some assistance, whether calling Dove House or calling the police. Dove House, I know they have an extraordinary team of social workers who are really prepared to respond. So if you think you might be observing a situation of domestic violence, I just really encourage you to call them and get some guidance from them about how to potentially offer some support or get them some support.
I think that's really important, Siobhan. Part of it is because sometimes by the time the police respond, it's kind of a last-ditch frustrated effort to find some kind of assistance, some kind of help. But, you know, sometimes that can be, you know, if we have the right map to follow in those situations and also the support. I would imagine that support is probably the key to anyone that is receiving, is the recipient of domestic violence.
Indeed. And I just want to give everyone the number to Dove House. If you're listening and you need some support or you think you might know of someone who does, their phone number is 360-385-5292. And they're located at 1045 10th Street, right near the hospital in Port Townsend. And as I said, they've got just such a talented and committed group of social workers there that can really help you navigate a situation. So don't hesitate to reach out to them.
You know, speaking of young people, tell us about this Placemakers program. What's happening there? What's that all about?
Yeah, we're excited about this. It's a group of young professionals in Jefferson County. It's just getting off the ground, although I think I've heard from them that they have something like 80 people already joined the network. But, you know, this can be a kind of isolating place for people who are in their 20s, 30s, and 40s. We tend to have families who raise their children here, and then the children go to college, and more often than not, they don't return, and particularly with housing costs being what they are these days, they don't come back to Jefferson County. So there's a group of 20, 30, 40-year-olds who are here making their way as working professionals. And Magdalene Adenau and a group of young professionals here have come together to create what they're calling placemakers. And it's to provide connectivity and support among that group of folks. So you can find their information on their Facebook page if you look at placemakers. And I think that they're just getting started now. And they're doing some listening about what kind of social opportunities, social information, professional development opportunities, and networking that they want to do so they can design some programming so that people of those ages feel welcome and supported and hopefully will become the future business owners in our community. Such an important piece of support that they're putting together.
Well, that sounds wonderful. And I think that I was contemplating talking about maybe the 10-point proposal for housing and homelessness here in the county. But I think that might be an entire program where we might want to talk about that, the then and now part of it.
And I would love to have some of the folks on the interlocal task force on, so we can have them kind of walk us through that and ask them some questions. That would be great.
Yeah, it's just sort of a compare and contrast sort of a thing. I think that would be helpful. So,
in the short term, Chris, there are a couple of pieces of news around our community members who are living without shelter. One is there is a local group of folks who are starting what's called the Community Build. They'll be building 12 tiny homes. And they've just taken the initiative to do this on their own, having heard about the folks at the fairgrounds who have been moved and don't have shelter, and now that winter's coming. So just want to say thank you to Barbara Morey and Judy Alexander and so many of the community activists who are stepping forward to help with shelter for folks who would otherwise be living in tents in our community. And then finally, wanted to say that the Warming Center also is looking to start up in October, and they still need a location. So if anyone listening might have a good location for the daytime warming shelter, as a reminder, our overnight shelter closes during the day. So on cold days, we need a place for our community members to go. So if there's anyone who might know of a good spot where these folks can go and stay warm and dry during the day, please call the Community Foundation and let us know, and we'll pass along that information.
Wise words. Thank you, Siobhan. And let's see. Oh, well, speaking of the rains coming, we have our local businesses struggling. Some are struggling, some aren't, depending on the needs. But
just wanted to put a shout out, Chris. You know, as we transition back into indoors, a lot of our businesses have been able to use space creatively and have dinner out on the sidewalk and host singular people in their businesses while their families or friends wait outside. You know, that's going to become less and less comfortable as the weather turns. Just kind of wanted to put it out there that the more we can all do to think about how to support our businesses through the next 6 months, the better. Buy gift cards, have dinner catered for yourself, for your family, you know, go take carry out, buy local, make sure to support your local artisans, and just really hunker down so that we can get everyone through to next year, and hopefully a few more solutions around the health impact of the pandemic.
Well, that sounds great. So let's think that. Let's keep that in our heads, that's for sure. Siobhan, until the next time, 2 weeks from today, thanks for joining me, and welcome another edition of Community Tides. And now we're on alternate Fridays at 12:10 with yours truly, Chris, and co-host Siobhan Canty. Thank you so much. And we shall talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And you're listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend.